It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Tuesday morning arrives. Tuesday midday arrives. And for all of us, we're hoping just to navigate Tuesday overall, especially when we look outside at the weather. And after all, it's Tuesday, right? Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 1049, 1019, AM 1260. We're live, we're local, we're digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Viewable by those of you who care to avail yourselves of Twitch. Glad to have you along for the ride as well. My name is Craig Way. Well, thank you for joining us. Jeff Howe, my co-host, will be joining us shortly. I can look through the glass to my right and see Jeff putting the finishing touches on a brand new edition of the Blitz podcast with the irrepressible Rod Babers, complete with all kinds of, you know, spiral paper torn out and notes all over it. That's Rod's trademark all these years. And the erstwhile Matt Butler behind the mic there is the producer as well. So they're putting that together. You'll be able to hear that tonight at 7 o'clock on the Horn, the brand new Blitz podcast. But Jeff will be along shortly, ready to go as always behind the glass. Our producer, the man who's in charge of everything good, for that matter, the things that aren't good, but there are very few that aren't good that come out of Flex ATX. In fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find something not good. It's all good when it's Flex ATX, because in the final analysis, it's the Flex. Our man, Jonathan John Donaldson, J. Donaldson, we know him as Snoop Daniel. Good morning to you.
We're Keurig cup scrubbing today.
Keurig time. I gave Snoop some credit on this because this morning, Linda offered to make me a cup of coffee, and I said, "Nick, you know what? I was getting things together. I said, don't worry about it. I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna stop along the way, probably hit a Starbucks or whatever, and I'm gonna get coffee for me and Snoop." So I actually texted Snoop as I was getting ready to pull out of the driveway. "Hey, would you like me to get his tailor made brevet, which is basically half coffee and half cream, basically, right? It's espresso and coffee, right? And cream,
it does,
right?
The trick for me.
It does. It does. Especially because you get the one that's big enough to fill up a tanker truck. You always like the venti, which I figured out you probably need the venti because of all the cream that's in that thing, right? You need the big one. So
I guess so.
I was ready to do it, to do the mobile order, and the neighborhood people a lot of times say, why don't you drink the local coffee shop too. And I do. It's just that when I'm rolling in, it's pretty quick to do it off the app, to do the mobile thing, so I can just, you know, spin in, pick it up, and go on my way. But this particular Starbucks location did no longer, or at least not today, does mobile orders. So I go in there, and I was following one of those giant propeller trucks on 360. It was when we had when I say propeller trucks, you know what I'm talking about. One of those long flatbed trucks that's carrying one of those giant wind turbine propeller blades, wide load, you know, and all that stuff. And so it really slowed everything down. And so by the time I pulled into the Starbucks, the line was like out the door. We're doing without coffee this morning, unfortunately. Oh, man, it's tough to do without coffee.
Maybe they stopped doing mobile orders because so many people don't even come to pick it up. Have you seen that?
Well, that wouldn't make sense, though, because, I mean, as long as they're paid for.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, yeah.
I think it's a jammed-up deal. I'm not sure. Sometimes it's an employee thing. I'm not sure. But in any event, Snoop said, well, I'll go Keurig for you. And I do that at home. I got no problem with Keurig. So anyway, got the coffee there. And for Tuesdays, as we say, we need it. The topics that we'll get to coming up in a few minutes, we'll have our Whataburger top five, which today, of course, Tuesday, means the double meat with cheese edition, the top 10 of the high school football polls, top 25 in the 6A poll. I've perused all the rankings this morning. We have two more teams in the statewide top 10s this week. Two more have joined the party. We'll get to that in a few moments. Following that, we'll visit with Hank Carter, head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers. They come off their win last week, and they get ready for Aikens this week. So we'll visit with Coach Carter. We'll have Jeff's Longhorn Notebook coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll have Inconceivable later on this hour. We have our sharp review of the Big 12, a look back at the Big 12 of the weekend and getting ready for this weekend. So we'll have all of that coming up. Dan, on the we also have the Specs text line. We always invite you to participate if you have a question, a comment, a thought. We'll never turn those down as long as they're kept within the bounds of decency. The Specs text line is open at 337-3776. That is 512-337-3776. For example, Dan had a couple offerings. One was to say hook 'em horns. The other was don't hate on the Astros. Not hating on them now. Not hating on. You know, I had some people ask me about that. Yeah, how are you going to feel about this long haul? How would I have felt about if the Dodgers had gotten in? I would have wanted the Dodgers to be in the World Series because I'm a Dodger fan. But the tip of the hat to the Atlanta Braves overcoming everything that they overcame this year to get into the World Series. Amazing what they've done. Hot pitching and really hot hitting have made a difference. That said, I'm looking for ways that they would seeing how they could beat the Astros, and there aren't many because the Astros, even without Lance McCullers Jr., even without him, I think would be in my mind an overwhelming favorite. Maybe five games. Something like that. I think the Astros will win. But with regard to the other stuff and the jokes I made in the past, it goes back to, obviously, the bitterness that a lot of baseball fans have had about the Astros because of what happened in 2017. It was interesting hearing Richard Justice, formerly of the Houston Chronicle, for all those many years. He was beat writer and a columnist many, many years, and then, of course, writes for Texas Monthly. He was on with Bucky and Aaron this morning, and he said, you know, they've kind of used it as a badge of honor. You know, they've kind of closed their ranks, all the vitriol that happened on the road, booed in every town and catcalled and all those other kinds of things as motivation. And it's worked. I mean, they're talented enough even if they need it, but it has worked. But, you know, I think we're all realistic about this. Probably just in the same way that folks grew to really despise the New England Patriots because of Bounty Gate and Deflate Gate and this gate and that gate and all that other kind of stuff. And it's Belichick, and it's a lot of the same cast of characters every year. So it was easy to do that. I feel that probably in some folks' mind, as long as there are still not one, but a collective group of guys from that 2017 group that was in the cheating scandal, as long as there are still guys on that team, then folks are gonna voice their displeasure and root for them to lose and that sort of thing. And there's five guys that are still and central figures when you think of Carlos Correa and you think of Alex Bregman and obviously Altuve. I mean, when you think of that group, there's always going to be that there. Will some of it be jealousy ever? Absolutely, because they're really, really good. But some of it will just be about them, you know, crossing the boundaries and not playing by the rules and all that other kind of stuff. So anyway, that's just some thoughts about that. And as Dan said, it's nice the Astros have built a program of consistency year after year. They really have in the last 6 years. So there's that. So one more other question about we'll jump to football. Somebody said, one question. Everybody praises the Oklahoma quarterback for a smart play. What are the chances they rule momentum stop if Kansas strips the football in that situation? It's a valid question. You're talking about Saturday afternoon. It was fourth down and one, and Oklahoma was going for the football. They hand the ball to Kennedy Brooks. It looks like Kansas has him stopped. They're driving, starting to drive him back, and Caleb Williams just yanks the ball out from him and goes forward. They had to review to make sure he wasn't beyond the line of scrimmage, because then it would have been an illegal forward pass, because he would have been handing off the ball underhand forward beyond the line of scrimmage. And then it so, but then you could tell, and I immediately said, and was watching it. I said that's a legal play. It is legal because it was behind the line of scrimmage. You can throw it between your legs. You can do whatever you want behind the line of scrimmage. Because it was behind the line of scrimmage, they were able to do it. Now, it does raise a valid point. What if the officials had ruled momentum stop, forward progress stop? I think Joey Galloway was on his soapbox about that on College Game Day Final after and said play should have been ruled dead, play should have been ruled dead. There was still a movement of legs going forward and then starting to go back as the Kansas defenders were driving back. It would have been a borderline. That's one of those deals sometimes when we talk about plays that are reviewable, an instant replay. If it's ruled one way, it probably wouldn't have been overturned to the other way. But if it had been ruled the other way, it probably wouldn't have been overturned the other way. It's just how it was originally called. I think it's the same there. That it's a bang-bang borderline call. And what they were reviewing was not forward progress. They can't review forward progress being stopped. It's a judgment call on the officials at that point. But what they were reviewing was to see if he was beyond the line of scrimmage. And once I knew that that's obviously what they were reviewing, then it was not going to overturn the call. Now, to further follow your point, if they had ruled forward progress stopped, Kansas would have had the football, what, around the 43-yard line or something like that. It would have been in the midfield area between the 40s anyway. They would have had the football down five with a brief amount of time left. It would have been interesting to see if Oklahoma would have been able to get the stop that they needed. It would have been interesting, but we'll never know the answer to that. So there it is. Victor says, just FYI, I have my crack research team looking at the total score of the game Friday. LBJ and Lamb passes might be the most points scored at Nelson Field. It's 130 points scored. That's possible. And LBJ's 88, maybe top three by one team, should have an answer by Thursday or Friday. Great, Victor. Love to have that.
Ooh, Victor actually called into Flex and gave us live updates.
Did he really?
Yes, on the show last Friday.
Excellent.
So appreciate you, Victor. That made the show sound really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that we were like on the scene. So the public help from the stadium calls are really cool. Yeah. An old school throwback.
Yeah, there we go. A couple of high school football related questions, which is going to get us into the Whataburger top five. Somebody wants to know how good is Buda Johnson. I know they got a couple of big games left on the season. 8-0 looks good in this fairly brand new school. Can they make a deep run in the playoffs? And then there's another question. Longhorn fan in Denton says, can you explain how they choose which teams go into Division One and Division Two for the 6A playoffs? Yes, we can do that. The way that it is done in 6A, it's completely on enrollment. So, but because in it's done completely on enrollment, first of all, let me answer the question. The top two enrollments, regardless of whether they finish where they finish in the top four, of course, obviously the top four teams make the playoffs out of a district. And they do that in all classifications. The top four teams get in. Out of those top four teams, the ruling is that out of those top four teams, the top four district records that go into the postseason, of those four, the top two enrollments, the two largest enrollments go into the Division I bracket, regardless of whether they finish first place, second place, third place, or fourth place. Examples, Westlake, if they win the district title outright, would be Division II. Lake Travis, if they win the division, the district title outright, would be Division One. Regardless, and of course they play the final week of the regular season, and that'll be for the district title. But regardless of who wins that game, Lake Travis is going Division One, and Westlake is going Division Two. Regardless, that's based on enrollment. So the top four teams get in, and of the top four, the top two enrollments go Division One. And the next two enrollments go to Division II. Where it gets interesting is if you have a team that is on the outside looking in right now and then gets in, and it bumps a team from one division to another. The example we were laying out last week is Del Valle, and Del Valle still has a mathematical shot to get in. But after San Marcos beat them, the odds are greatly against it. But if Del Valle should get in, they would be Division I based on their enrollment. And Bowie, which right now stands to be a Division I team, would then slide over to Division II. It's all on enrollment. So with that in mind, it's time to go to our Whataburger Top 5.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's Double Meat with Cheese Edition.
Here we go.
Top 10 ranking.
We call it the Double Meat with Cheese Edition because it's not a top 5, it's a top 10. It's twice the size. Hence, Double Meat with Cheese Edition there for the Whataburger Top 10. In 6A, what we were just talking about is in truth a top 25 because they don't split it, as we just talked about, into divisions until the playoffs. By the way, the reason that they do it that way, because I've had some questions, why don't they just do like the other classifications? There are far more suburban and inner city school districts where the schools are packed together. They don't need to split it up in advance like that. The reason it was done initially like that at the lower classifications was to cut down on travel. And it really has made a difference. And they've done that all the way up to 5A. They don't really need to do that 6A, although there's been some talk about possibly adjusting that going forward, maybe for the next realignment. But for now, 6A doesn't split until you get to the playoffs. And because of that, the brand new weekly rankings in Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine are a top 25 for 6A and then top 10 for the other classifications. So here we go, 6A, where the top 10, in fact, the top 18 spots remain unchanged from last week. Westlake is still number one, followed by Katy, Southlake Carroll, Duncanville, Atascocita, Rockwall Heath. By the way, this week is Atascocita North Shore week, and North Shore is number eight. Spring Westfield, seven. North Shore, eight. Lake Travis holds at number nine, and Allen rounds out the top 10. Second 10, Denton Geyer, Spring High. Northside, Brennan from the San Antonio area. Rockwall, Arlington Martin, Euless Trinity, Cibolo Steel, Midland Legacy, Louisville, and Vandegrift up a spot now to 20. So the Vipers are ranked 20th in the state. The Woodlands, Fort Bend, Ridgepoint, DeSoto, Dickinson, and Jersey Village round out the 6A top 25. Everything else is a top 10 because they're already split into divisions. So 5A Division 1, well, 5A Division 1, there's only one change, and it's a swapping of a couple of spots. But here's the rankings. Denton Ryan is number one, followed by College Station, Highland Park, Amarillo Tascosa, Corpus Christi Veterans Memorial, Colleyville Heritage, Frisco Lone Star, Longview, Katy Peyto, and Fort Bend Hightower. The only real shift was Longview and Frisco Lone Star swap places 8 for 7, 7, 7 for 8. 5A Division 2, I want to make sure I am reading this correctly here because I have the, yes. All right, this is where we see something different in terms of the area schools being in to the top 10 rankings. So in 5A, in Division 1, we had one change. Denton Ryan is still number 1, College Station 2, Highland Park 3, Tascosa 4, Katy Peyto is up to 5, Corpus Christi Vets Memorial is 6, Colleyville Heritage 7, Frisco Lone Star 8, Longview 9, Dripping Springs in the top 10 for the first time this season at number 10, which leads into the question about Buda Johnson, because this week it's Drip against Buda Johnson. 2-8-0s. Big showdown there. And the winner of that game, I think, will, you know, obviously, if Dripping Springs wins, they'll stay in the top 10. I think if Buda Johnson wins, they'll get into the top 10. That's big. 5A Division 2. Aledo, Lucas Lovejoy, Fort Bend Marshall, Ennis, Lubbock, Cooper, South Oak Cliff, Texas High of Texarkana, Montgomery, Alamo Heights, and Crosby, new to the rankings this week, round out 5A Division 2. 4A D1, LBJ still number one in the state. In fact, the top five remained the same. Stephenville, El Campo, Melissa, and Argyle follow. Kilgore's up to sixth. Wichita Falls, Hershey from 9 up to 7. Cal Allen of Corpus Christi up from 10 to 8. Two teams that weren't in the poll last week are back in. La Vega, who's a tough group even with three losses after beating Midlothian Heritage, is number 9. And Vitor in at number 10. 4A Division 2, which is almost identical to last week. Carthage, Gilmer, Salina, West Orange Dart, China Spring, Belleville, Van. Then Cuero's up to 9. Sinton is up to 8, and Cuero plays Smithville this week. Huge game this week for that district title. Sinton is 9, Wimberley back in the poll at number 10 after that impressive 27-0 shutout of Navarro. That's Aronimo Navarro they beat. 3A Division 1, Jim Ned, Brock, Pallettsville, Mount Vernon and Industrial swap spots. Then the rest of it is the same as last week. West, Grandview, they play this week. Number 6 in the state, number 7 in the state, West and Grandview. Lorena, Tatum, and Columbus. 3A Division 2 is the top 5 the same. Franklin, Gunner, Childress, Holiday, and West Rusk. Newton is up to 6. Lubbock, Roosevelt from 10 to 7 after beating Abernathy. Wascom is 8. Canadian is 9. And Abernathy dropped to number 10 for number 6 after the loss to Lubbock, Roosevelt. 2A Division 1, Refurio, Shiner, Timpson, and Crawford, the top 4. Hawley up to 6. New Deal. Hawley up to 5 from 6. New Deal is 6th. Beckville 7. Mason number 8. Coleman is 9. And Forsan number 10. 2AD2. Mart is 1. Munster up to number 2. Winthorst at number 3. Those two swap places. Then it's Albany, Stratford, Fall City, Tenaha, Clarendon, Wellington, and McCamey. 1AD1. That's 6 man. May, Jonesboro, Abbott, Water Valley, Rankin, Spring Laker, Sterling City, Garden City, Iron Hermley, and finally 1A Division 2, Motley County, Strawn, Richland Springs, Balmoray, Follett, Anton, Jayton, Throckmorton, Benjamin, and Klondike from near Lamesa out on the South Plains. There it is, your Whataburger Top 10, the Double Meat with Cheese edition of the Whataburger Top 5. All right, up next, we'll visit with Lake Travis Cavaliers head coach Hank Carter. We have our Longhorn Notebook. We have a lot more coming up when we continue today with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
There are only 4 reasons.
Got a couple of questions on the specs text line that I promise I'll get to. One, thanking me for explaining the difference between Division 1 and Division 2. In 6A and saying, does it work the same with the other divisions about splitting it up come playoff times? Well, from 5A down through Class A, they do it in advance by enrollment. Again, the original design behind that was to help schools in the more rural areas save on travel. That's why they did it in advance. They knew the district games they had, and then they could schedule non-district games that worked out best in their area. So that's why they've done it that way from 5A down through A. 6A with the more suburban and city-centered based schools, there hasn't been the need for that yet. So, and then there's a question with regard to the Oklahoma play. Folks raise a question about whether it's a handoff or a fumble. I'll get to that, the interpretation of that coming up. But right now, joining us on the Vaqueros Cafe Hotline and for our weekly conversation, which is brought to you by our friends at Cedar Park Overhead Doors, the head coach of the 9th-ranked team in the state, the Lake Travis Cavaliers, Hank Carter, joins us right now. Hank, I appreciate the time. How are you on this Tuesday morning?
Doing pretty good. Just finished up practice.
Yeah, and I wanted to get your thoughts on something. We haven't really talked about this in terms of the specifics, because normally we get into talking about your guys playing well and who's healthy and who steps up, and then taking each opponent, giving them the respect that they deserve, and all of those kinds of things. The one thing as a kind of a follow-up to that, would you say that, and this is not to downgrade any opponent, but when you come off a win over, say, a school that has had a really good season, like Bowie, and where the kids know each other really well, that maybe you personally as a coach feel a little more of a vibe from your guys off coming off a win over a school like that as opposed to another district victory, not to put down any other district school, just because you know your kids know these guys really well, and they're a good quality program that Coach Abels has had to get that win.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the more the kids feel like they pass a true test, they certainly get a little bit, I think they get a little bit more excited while they're doing it, creates a little bit more doubt in their minds on, you know, is this a game or a team that, you know, that we're likely to lose against, or, you know, that we feel like it does some things that make us nervous and we're, you know, maybe a little bit more concerned about it. You know, I do think that plays into it with the kids a little bit, but also in games that get out of hand, the backups just play a lot more. And so there's a mix of that. There's the starters don't play as much. The starters are normally pretty fired up, though, because their buddies are getting to go in and play most of the second half, and they get a chance to see their friends do some things and make some plays in their own right and have some big blocks and things like that. So it's a combination of those things.
Yeah, and then do you, as a coach, find that your guys, once they get back to the practice field, you get them up for the meetings the next day where they come back up and see that and review the film, and then when they get back to the practice field, there is a little extra spring in the step coming off a win like that, no matter who the next opponent is?
Yeah, and I think, too, depends on how we play, you know. So, you know, for example, against Buda and that, there's some things that we didn't execute all that well. And so it really gives you an opportunity following up after playing a tough opponent where they expose a lot of your weaknesses or a lot of the areas that you really got to improve upon. And so it makes practice, it's easier to make practice matter more to all the kids whenever we're coming off something where they've seen themselves make a lot of mistakes on video.
Coach Carter, speaking of backups, can I ask you about a running back, Aiden Albright? He doesn't get in much, but when he does, it seems like he finds it at the end zone. Can you kind of talk about the junior?
Yeah, Aiden Albright is a guy that was banged up most of spring ball and was banged up probably the first month of the season, but he is healthy now, and he is running the ball great. We've got the backfield is a little bit crowded. There's a bunch of guys over there that can play. But Aiden's a kid that's come up through our system and has done a great job, and we have a lot of confidence in him. So, funny story, Aiden's dad is from the same neck of the woods that I grew up. And so I knew about him. He grew up in Athens, and I grew up in Eustis. So they were like they were the big town 10 minutes away, and his dad was a good football player. But his dad's family ran a Mexican food restaurant called Cactus Cafe. And so I had probably eaten at that restaurant that Aiden Albright's family had run about 10,000 times growing up. And so whenever they moved here, that was just kind of a neat story. So I just call him East Texas all the time. I call Aiden that, even though he wasn't born out in Athens, but that's what I call him.
Is the restaurant right there on Highway 175 in Athens?
It's on 175 if you're coming out going from Athens to Eustis. So it's there now, or the building is, but they changed the name of it. But that was a good spot. That was a weekly spot for the Carter family to hit back in the old days.
There you go. There you go. Hank Carter, head coach of Lake Travis, joining us here for our weekly conversation. You brought up Aiden and how he's healthy now, and you said a crowded backfield. There's two questions involved with this. One, how challenging is the process that you and your coaching staff have in conjunction with and in conversation with your medical staff and your training staff about when you feel like a kid is absolutely ready to go and just, you know, let it go completely and not be tentative, one. And then two, how challenging is it to be able to integrate a guy once you know he's ready to go, but yet you're getting production out of your other guys in the backfield, to make it all still flow and work well and that everybody still works together?
Yeah, that's a tough part. So the first part of it would be, you know, managing a kid's injuries. I think that sometimes coaches get a little bit of a bad rap, and maybe coaches earn this, but feeling like they're pushing a kid to come back and play because they feel like he's a really good player and it can help the overall team maybe before the kid's ready to play. We don't do that, and really – I don't have to worry about that for a number of reasons, but number one, it's not worth it. It's not worth hurting a kid. And certainly as an adult that's in charge of young people and a leader of young people, you need to make sure you're sending the right message. But oftentimes, kids, especially if they feel like there's bigger games down the road or if they want to go play college or, hey, is it worth risking? I basically just tell them, if you're available to play and you're healthy, you're a football player, you should play. Now, depending on how much you play, may depend on how many days you practice that week. But I think that the mindset should always be get healthy so that you can play when you're available. Let the coaches figure out how much you can get in there. And certainly with us, like especially with Watson coming back and the DJ playing primarily running back and a little bit of defense this year, you know, our coaching staff has got to figure out what's the best combination on how to get our best 11 on the field in the best situations. And so with Watson coming on and being healthy, he's looked great on both sides of the ball. And so integrating him back in there, again, those guys are fighting for playing time. And, it's a good problem to have, though, because, again, it makes practice matter because the guys are trying to go out and practice and earn more reps and earn more confidence from the coaches to put them in there in big spots. And so, that's our job as a coaching staff is to figure that stuff out.
When you say that it makes practice matter, you also get the sense your guys understand this as well, and so therefore it makes practice the totality of practice better for all the guys because some guys at a position realize, hey, I've got to step it up, and then it just kind of is like a good virus that spreads through your group where guys understand they all have to step it up.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so that's one thing that's changed at our place over the years. When I first got to Lake Travis and we were 1,700 students or so, I feel like we still had about the same number of really talented players, but there was a bigger gap between the guy that was a starter and the guy that was a backup. There was a clear gap. That has changed now. And so now I feel like we still have a lot of great players, and we've certainly been blessed with that. But now the difference between the starters or the difference between the next two guys is really, really thin. And so what that does is it makes the kids have to, they have to compete for playing time. I say this all the time to parents that are frustrated with kids that are wanting. The kids decide who plays. The kids decide who plays and who wins the jobs based on how they compare to one another. And it is. It's a competitive sport, which doesn't always make everybody feel great, but that's what it is. And learning to go out there and be at your best and to take your best shot, and if it's not good enough, get up and go do it again. That's the thing that we're encouraging. And certainly competition and practice – you have to earn the coach's confidence to get more reps in games, and that's why practice matters so much.
Now, I know we've just had UIL snapshot day and all that sort of stuff, and then the new realignment comes out in February. There's no mystery as to what classification your school is going to be, and I just find it mind-boggling. You mentioned when you first got to Lake Travis, you have 1,700 students. The last enrollment, at least what was officially listed going in the year, was 3,401, twice as many students as when you first arrived on campus. Could you have possibly believed that, or did you see that kind of growth coming when you first arrived back at Lake Travis?
Well, it's funny. So whenever Coach Morris and I met with Jack Moss, the AD back then, it was basically Jack putting together a sales pitch for Coach Morris. And one of the sales pitches was, this is community is going to grow, and Jack had his stuff down. He had this whole packet of all the demographic studies and what was going to happen. And we really didn't believe it. At the time, we were coming from Stephenville, which was back then 4A. Today, would have been Division II 5A, and that's what Lake Travis competed in 2007. And to see us now, I don't know what our snapshot will turn in, but it'll be between 3,600 and 3,700 students. No, I would have never fathomed it, and I don't even really believe how big we've gotten. But, Austin is growing. Certainly our district, there's a lot of land, and folks keep moving here.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Hank, you brought up Coach Morris, and I'm sure you're not surprised by what he's done pretty quickly in getting and it's not like Allen was way, way off the pace, but – they had a little bit of a drop-off. He's come in, took him a couple of games, got a huge win when they got that over Guyer, and they're still continuing to grow and get better and better. How often do you visit with Coach Morris? Like I said, I'm sure you're not surprised at all by what he's doing up at Allen now.
Yeah, I was visiting with him a lot. It's kind of funny. The tables have turned. When he left here and I took over as head coach and he went up to be, to do the college thing, I was wearing him out, calling him and emailing him and texting him. And when he came back to high school, it's kind of like the role had reversed. And so he was, remind me, how have y'all done this? How have you done that? And so I was on the phone with him every day for a while. Now I talk to him once a week or so, and really like we always have, just keeping tabs. But yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, whenever you have a staff change, everything changes. And I know Allen's got a great reputation, and I'm sure Coach Morris has got to balance the things that are near and dear to that community that can't be changed or resistant to change, and the things that just have to if he's going to be able to run it how he wants to. It takes a while for the kids and the staff to really figure all those things out. And so, that's the great thing about having a preseason. And yeah, I would expect those guys to be rolling as they enter the playoffs. They've got great community support. They've got great players, and they've got a great staff. And so that's that's a pretty good combination. So I would bet Allen is going to be playing at a very high level from here on.
And he's got something that I know coaches really like when it works out. And I know you've been in this position before, a proficient sophomore quarterback. He's got the running game going, obviously, there. But when you have a proficient sophomore quarterback, because it can be a double-edged sword, isn't it, when you have a sophomore as your starting quarterback?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Most people would prefer not to have a sophomore starting at quarterback. I still remember watching film of when Garrett Gilbert played here and started as a sophomore, and he was just getting the fire knocked out of him, and he was just a different guy, obviously, than he became later on junior and senior year. But, yeah, if you have a sophomore quarterback that's playing at a high level, that bodes pretty well for your program the next couple of years, because just with the amount of reps, it's just like playing a video game. The more you do it, the better you get at it. And, so things will be moving really, really slow for that kid in the years to come, and I'm sure he'll have a heck of a career.
Let me get your thoughts on this matchup with Aikens. It's a team that started off really hot. I know they've taken some body shots lately, so to speak, including last week against Westlake, but clearly Coach Sachs has started to make an impact there in Enro. What's your thoughts on the Eagles when you look at them?
Yeah, they did. They've had an up-and-down season. Their kids play very hard, and I think that's probably the biggest impact that I can see. Those guys are competing and getting after it regardless who they're playing. They've gotten some wins this year and some, especially the win early in district against Hayes. That was a big one for that program. But, yeah, they've kind of gotten into the rest of their schedule. They've been up and down a little bit, but we expect them to come out and give us their best shot, and their kids are going to play hard and compete, and I'm excited about the opportunity for our kids to go match up against them.
It'll be this Friday, and, of course, folks will be able to hear it here on the Horn at 7:30 kickoff with Mark and Bucky and Stu with the call. Hank, as always, I really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck this week.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
All right, that's Hank Carter, head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers. And it's funny, I was talking about that, the state polls. They're number 9 in the state, and Allen is number 10 in the state. And there you have Chad Morris. Jumping right in. They took a hit early in the season, and they've kind of tried to get going, and now they've got the running game really going well, and their defense is playing well, and the sophomore quarterback's making a difference as well. So keep an eye on them. It didn't look like they went too far away before Allen has returned. Before we get to Longhorn Notebook and then Inconceivable, I tell you what, let's do the Longhorn Notebook right now.
Longhorn Notebook.
All right, so here's the notebook. The Longhorns obviously are going to Waco. They play Baylor. It's going to be the fifth consecutive 11 a.m. kickoff. There could be 6 in a row. We don't know yet. It's the 6-day, the dreaded 6-day television selection window that's coming up. And so the television networks decide on Saturday, and I've had, again, we still get questions about this, about who actually does the deciding and things like that. It is the television networks. It's not the Big 12 Conference. And since Fox got into the mix a few years ago, it's an alternating situation with ESPN. And so the other choices next weekend are, I think, Baylor and TCU. I think it's Oklahoma State and Kansas, I guess. There's some that aren't really that ultra appealing. And so, therefore, that's why I say don't be surprised if it winds up being yet another 11-8. Of course, that's in Ames, Iowa. So, it's probably a little bit easier for folks rolling out of bed on a Saturday morning and then taking a slow walk and march up to that as well. So, that's a Longhorn Notebook, which leads me into the question, because it's more on a Big 12 line, and we'll get Jeff's thoughts on this. Well, I had somebody say on the Specs text line, Craig, sorry, you're totally wrong. It should have been ruled a fumble and only advanced by Brooks. It's a valid question. And I had somebody else ask that about it. In fact, Trey Elling brought up a point. The rule reads, now here's how the rule reads, that a player has to actually have to make an effort to hand off. And so if he didn't, then it should have been ruled a fumble, and only the person who fumbled can advance. Your thoughts? Here's my thoughts. How does that rule apply to a zone read? Think about it. When the quarterback's pulling in, he pulls it out at the last second, or he starts to pull and the other guy pulls it out. Do they rule that a fumble? No, they don't rule it a fumble, and they're not going to rule that a fumble in that case. It's a judgment call. Could it have been? Yeah. within the letter of the law. But in reality, they're not going to rule that a fumble. It's one player taking it from another, just as it would be a handoff or pulling it back in on his own read. That is almost never going to be ruled a fumble. I think the only way it's going to be ruled a fumble is if it literally pops out of the hands. If it's still being pulled from one set of hands to the other, it's going to be looked at as a handoff. No different. And because it's behind the line of scrimmage, it can be a forward handoff. I know how the rule reads, but I'm telling you the reality of the situation. The officials are never, ever, ever going to rule that a fumble unless the ball leaves the sets of hands and gets into the air or on the ground. And that's not what happened. That's why, because it was behind the line of scrimmage, ruled a handoff, albeit a forward one, but behind the line of scrimmage, keeping it legal. And that's why Williams took it forward. And I agree with everybody else. It would have been interesting to see what happened had forward progress been stopped. That should have been, if you're going to have a ruling on changing that play, it would have been more correct to make that rule. But they're never going to rule that a fumble because it's being taken from one set of hands to the other. It's no different than a handoff pulling it back in on a zone read. Same exact type thing, unfortunately, if you're... You know, if you were looking for the upset there. All right, coming up, we'll have today's Inconceivable when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Bucky and Aaron.
Noop Daniel.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
It may be inconceivable to some to see how that Kansas-Oklahoma ruling came out. Jersey guy, for example, says the real question is, did the running back cross the line of scrimmage but was pushed back? Then Williams ripped the ball from his hands before he was down. So once he crossed the line of scrimmage, then first, can there still be a forward handoff? The answer, Jersey guy, is no, but the replay did review. He did not cross the line of scrimmage. That was the deal. Stoner says it should not be ruled a fumble. Illogical. Somebody else said, I don't care about the fumble handoff situation. That's all legal in my eyes. The forward progress is the only thing in question, honestly. Couldn't agree more. It's all about whether forward progress was stopped. In the judgment of the officials, unfortunately, if you're looking for the upset there, it was not stopped. That was what it is. So for the fans who said it should have been a rule to fumble, no. It doesn't matter if whether he makes a handoff. Like the illustration I pointed out is the same thing with the zone read. Start to hand off and pull it back in, or the guy pulls it away from the quarterback. Unless the ball is going to pop out of the hands of the two involved in the play, it's never going to be ruled a fumble. It just isn't. But could they have ruled forward progress halted? Absolutely. Could have. Didn't. All right. On Inconceivable. We have an update, Snoop, on the Tom Brady football for the 600th.
Yes.
Career touchdown pass. Remember we were talking about value yesterday, and Brady said, we'll give him a couple of jerseys or a couple of things like that. And everybody was like, do you realize the value would have been $600,000 at startup and maybe beyond that, you know, $700,000? Well, last night, if you were watching Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli, have you seen that yet?
I haven't yet.
Okay. Tom Brady was on with them last night, and they were joking about the whole deal. And he actually said, Brady said that Byron, the gentleman's name is Byron Kennedy, he's 29 years of age. Byron lost all his leverage when he gave up the ball. He should have held it. And then he said, and then he went on to tell him he's going to get it. He was joking about that. Here's what the guy's going to get now. What he's going to give him are, the team had already committed to giving him two signed jerseys and a signed helmet from Brady, a signed Mike Evans jersey, as well as his game cleats, a $1,000 credit to the Buck store, and season tickets for the rest of this year and all of 2022. Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? You know what else he got? A Bitcoin from Brady.
Nice.
Valued at $63,000.
And in Bitcoin, Bitcoin's legit.
$63,000.
That's one Bitcoin.
Yeah. So I'd say the guy did all right. I understand what you could value and all this kind of stuff. But if he just, you know, if he'd held on to it, then there would have been negotiation. Who knows where it would have gone? He said he was a big Brady fan. He couldn't say no to Tom Brady.
Yeah.
He did it in a nice way. I think the Bucks reciprocated quite nicely there. $1,000 in the team shop, two autographed Brady jerseys, an autographed Mike Evans jersey, an autographed Brady helmet, Mike Evans game cleats, I guess. They had that. And then season tickets for the rest of this year, all of next year, and, oh, $63,000 Bitcoin. I'd say he did all right.
He could flip it real quick and sell it.
Yeah.
He would just have that. Well,
yeah.
Cryptocurrency is.
You're into the crypto, aren't
well,
you?
Well, it's something I'm learning, especially because I'm not gambling anymore. Hey, so,
you
like,
to find out something else
yeah.
there? Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of sports related memorabilia and what it's worth, we'd all love to have a pair of Michael Jordan game worn sneakers. Especially from his rookie season, right? Had a pair sold at auction on Sunday, valued at $1.47 million.
For shoes?
There they are. The earliest known regular season game-worn Nike
I
shoes.
I can see that.
Sold at a Sotheby's auction in Vegas Sunday for nearly $1.5 million. It broke a record for sneakers sold at auction. The purchase by card collector Nick Fiorella more than doubled the previous record for the most expensive game-worn shoes initially set in 2020. It was another Jordan-worn pair for $615,000 with a piece of glass still in the shoe after he shattered a backboard in 1985. So you got that in there for authenticity's sake. The latest footwear was worn by Jordan in his fifth career NBA game against the Denver Nuggets and potentially also maybe even earlier. The Nike Airships were also signed by Jordan before being gifted to former Nuggets ball boy T.J. Lewis, who maintained the shoes before he sold them this week.
Yeah. Got to cash in at some point.
$1.47 million for those game-worn Nikes there. Okay, we have a wildlife story. You know, yesterday we mentioned that I know it surprised a lot of folks that to find out that Texas was the state with the most deaths by animal attacks by a wide margin over the past few years. It was something like 520, with California second, Florida was third, right? Another thing where you could also wondered about.